but let me tell you something. But that is no longer happening now. You're going to get cursed even more.
But they can stab me in the road and curse me then.
Right, because everybody, they're the same now. They ain't got the metaphor gone. So by passing by the bridge now, they can haul across and say, DJ, you're all this and DJ, you're all that.
And I'm going to wave back at them.
Right, I didn't know that.
Tell me, sir. Go ahead. Sorry, yeah, I don't talk foolishness.
Right, don't mind. But what I look at too, DJ, when we were going to school, right?
Mm-hmm.
We used to have a little religious education. We still used to go to Sunday school. If that used to work, I'm still trying to find out. I'm not saying that it isn't going to work, but I am saying that the little gospel in between, the little doctrines in between, if a fella got a callings or a knife or even a gun to draw, and you remember a commandment, I think he may hold himself when them things come back to me. He may say, you know what? Thou shalt not do X. Thou that shall not do Y. And that may stop the individual from doing it. I'm not going to say because I ain't got the doctorate in theology. I don't know if these things work or if they are effective. But I am just saying that I find that when I was going to school, we used to have to say a memory verse. We used to have to remember the commandments. We used to have religious education. We used to have to go in the garden and plant. Because boys has got a lot of energy, DJ. You know that. You're a father. So we used to plant and we used to grow. We used to pull grass. We used to understand that beans and carrots are good for X or Y. What carbohydrates? What proteins? These is things now that have been accepted from the classroom. Which I know, because these things don't no longer happen. I have children. And a lot of our friends of mine have children. So these are little things that can detract. These children have too much time on their hand. We're sitting down on the cell phone. We're sitting down on the laptop. We're sitting down on the... Where's the gadgets that they got? The tablet, the iPad, the this and the that. Them children don't know about no big toilet. There's a place for progress, yes. But we need to educate our children about hard work, about how we get from where we were to where we are now. We didn't come along and find a top and bottom bungalow. We had an old board and shingle, push out windows, carry out sheep, scrub pig pens, pull out grass from between the marjoram and the thyme. Them is things that you have to do before you go to school. And you still went to school and was productive and learned. Now the children get everything in the universe. They go through and they play the tale and they come out of school with nothing. Huh? You understand what I'm saying, DJ?
Yes, sir. So the truth is, right, that is only one aspect of it. That's only one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is that children learn by example. Okay? Now, if you have a situation where the institutions, and this is something that I keep harping on all the time. Perhaps I'm the only one with that particular soapbox, because everybody say they climb on their soapbox every once in a while. But apparently I'm the only one with this one. Children learn by example. And if when you were growing up and I was growing up and we had the pit toilet and we bathed in the yard and we used to peep at the neighbor daughter through the hole in the peeling and then have to go to confession because, you know, that's what we were told to do. I see Graham here shaking his head. I know you're talking about. He's twice as young as I am. So he had peeped through no peeling. He used to see it on naked pictures. Anyway, again, distracted by Graham. Let me say to you, sir, that the problem is we looked up to certain people. So we looked up to the preacher. We looked up to our school principal. We looked up to the police. We looked up to the judge. We looked up. If today, because of exposure, either through social media, regular media, word of mouth, the priest is seen as somebody who molested the altar boys and drink and had women all over the place. The politician is seen as a buyer of vote, a fornicator, a man who run about with plenty of women and children all over the place and hiding money overseas and getting bribed. The judge, every single one of the institutions, from Boy Scouts, come back. Look at what's happening in the United States with men in quote-unquote high positions who are molesters. We can soon have a list of those who did not molest, and that list can be zero. If you keep doing that, my question is, what is the standard you are going to set? What are you going to tell children about the Bible when they say the Bible? But the Bible got killing people and rape and murder and fornication and adultery and stoning people. What are you trying to tell me? So they used stone then. Now we have Molotov cocktails and AK-47 rifle. So we ain't stoning no more. Where is the yardstick that you're using? And that's the problem I have when we talk the way we talk about this gender and that gender and that person over there. Because here is my reality. I have seen the good, the bad, and the indifferent in all the genders. I have heard lies from males and females. I have chosen to align myself with the ladies who I thought were not morally unsound. And they didn't treat me no differently from the worthless women I knew. None. The only difference is I knew the worthless ones were worthless. That's the only difference. And they got worthless men, they got worthless women, and they got people who try their best and fail, and there are people who don't seem to try, and we can't figure out how they're getting through. You understand? So if we sit and look at people to determine whether by looking at them, they're DLP, BLP, Muslim, Catholic, Sons of God, Apostolic, or otherwise, whether they're Bajan, Trinidadian, Guyanese, or otherwise, whether they're succeeding by fair means or foul means, so we're wasting our time. If we see our children and we start saying we don't know how to deal with them, that they're getting on like that because they're going to that school there, and they look like that because they come from that society over there. So that's what we're doing. We're pointing fingers. We're not fixing a problem. The problem we have is that we've lost touch with them. We don't speak a language that they understand, and we haven't trained them to speak to us. I used to shout at my son when I saw him playing video games. His mother said to me, every time you shout at him, he jump, he ain't listening to you. And I changed my line of attack. I sat down next to him and I said, tell me what you're doing. Tell me why you're doing that. You know you're playing a video game and they got fellas your age who programming computers. Man went upstairs and bring an exercise book and show me that he had write programs for snakes and ladders and this and that. And I asked him, so where the money? So that's why he's doing IT, because that's what he want to do. So we have to learn to reach them. If we don't learn how to reach them, we could stop and talk about pit toilets till we dead. I died my soapbox. But my thing is this, right? As long as we continue to fight the mothers and the mothers continue to fight us, and we continue to say that, you know, that woman is a whatever, and you continue to say that man is a whatever, them children are sitting and look at us fighting and go, yeah, all right, so okay, yeah. How we expect them to get married? How we expect them to look at men and women and, you know, see them differently from how we project ourselves? But anyway, I ain't the relationship coach. I just have a broken heart. Brastax, good afternoon. How you done?
Mr. Johnson,
my
sir,
Lord, how are you, sir?
Your humble servant.
And your humbler servanter listens. Go ahead.
I don't know, sir. I got a compliment. You said, man, you then, Mr. Johnson, rough you up, man.
And you know many times, people tell me so, the same thing too, that I flog you and beat you and all kind of things. So
I said, well,
I was getting the same thing too, sir. Don't
I said that Mr. Johnson said he's very combative.
That ain't true at all, though.
But I hope I just agree or disagree.
Well, we have talked to one another still, you know. That's the important thing.
We are all combatants. We know what it is to go there and come back up.
Well, listen, we take our punches, we go, we bleed, and we put a whole piece of cloth on it and come back. Not even
that's
plaster.
Right. You're not a champion if you get knocked down and can't get back up.
That's a fact. Tell me.
That's right. Now, Mr. Johnson, a lot has been said now that the Germany Central Bank has delivered his presentation and so on. Mm-hmm. And some people seem confused as to why the foreign exchange account continues to decline. And I was telling to a young lady with whom I interact sometimes, or explained to her that the foreign exchange account has a certain number of responsibilities. Some are monthly and some
are quarterly and some are annual. It pays, you have to pay, that repayment comes out from there, I believe, once a year. Food import bills every month, all the import bills every month, credit cards every month. And then you get things like the bank profits that might be done every quarter. The profits from the bank goes overseas, but it goes to the central bank as foreign exchange. But it doesn't go in as foreign exchange, it goes in as Barbados dollars. And that is where one of the problems lie. Then you get the insurance companies. Profits also go out as foreign exchange. Then you get the retail sector. And remember that we don't own much retail sector now. Mainly, you know, I don't want to call it names, but the Masseys and all those people. Those people export their profits as well. So the central bank account is always under pressure. And as a friend of mine will say, the central bank got more nipples than it is so big. And the people continue to find nipples somewhere because they want, and another thing is credit card debt. Just another thing that is beginning to worry the situation. The problem is the money is coming out faster than it's going in. And I've heard you claiming again, mention that the tourism product, the tourism industry is not performing the way it should, because if you're telling me that you have an increased number of people coming in, but the revenue from that increased number is not evident, then it says somewhere along the line that revenue is, that foreign exchange is being lost. Either it's not being accounted for, or somebody is disposing it in a way they shouldn't, or the central bank can't find it. And I agree with you that there should be a way that you can monitor whether you've got all-inclusive or whether you've got whatever it is. You should be able to monitor or estimate the amount of money coming into Barbados for accommodation, for food, for entertainment, and all those kinds of things. We have computers, and that's what the computers are for, to break down these different areas into individual areas or revenue areas. And apparently, the people in tourism cannot get it done for some unknown reason. And I have said time and again, we have some assets here that we are not utilizing to raise funds. We have 13,000 people out there in cruise liners every day, or at least once a week, and we can't even get 1,000 of them off the ship. Why? Because there's nothing for them to do. I mean, how many times can I go to St. John Church and Carlington College and East Coast Road, or the Cave? We have the Barbados Horticultural Society as an area that is untapped, that has a lot of potential for revenue. When you have racing at the Garrison, that is another area that's untapped. You have people asking for a monkey jungle. Do you have a monkey jungle here? Do you have a monkey park? People longing to see monkeys. And we got monkey run all over Barbados destroying people crops. Then we can put a couple of piece of a fence in somewhere, block them off, let them come in one side, feed, and you outside you were. It's simple as that. You can't do that. A water park that we made promise for years can't come to fruition. A lot of things that we annual activate. People used to go in there by the agriculture department in Copper Colma Rock and see the pigs and the goats and sheep and cows inside there. And taxi drivers used to carry them in there. No, that is not there anymore. Why can't we set up something? You have Barbados tourism product marketing. You have marketing product and you have investment. What are these people doing? Now, let me say before I go any further, the Barbados tourism marketing arm overseas is doing a fantastic job. Based on the number of aircraft I see coming here, many of them are charters, and even more of them are private jets. And those people overseas are really doing a fantastic job. They're getting the people here. The problem is that when they get here, the people in marketing and the people in product and the people in investment are not getting to these people to give them something to spend money on.
So I want to, I let you speak, right? And every once in a while, and this is where people say I beat up on you. Because you make these statements, and I don't know what you base them on. But what I base my statements on are things that I know, and things that I know for a fact. On Monday of this week, I was asked at 5:30 to come and work on The Beat 104.1 FM. And during the course of the morning, I sat and spoke to a lovely young lady who calls me Uncle Dennis. And I always look forward to talking to her. And she was from the Barbados Tourism Product Authority. From time to time, I see Dr. Kerry Hall. And she comes from the Barbados Tourism Product Authority. And I can tell you, I'm sitting right here with a script in front of me that says the Barbados Tourism Product Authority invites you to the second lecture for the Barbados Sugar and Rum season. Now, the reason why I'll stop there, apart from the fact that I have to read the ad and record it later on, is this. There is a Barbados Sugar and Rum season, and it encourages visitors to the island to learn the story of rum, to get rum and chocolate massages that people charge for, to go and tour and drink and sample Barbados rum. It's part of their promotion that says, I am tourism, so that Barbadians understand their input. I take what you say about attractions. A destination should always have attractions. But one also has to find out what the visitor wants. So it doesn't make sense having an animal petting farm and showing people animals to pet that they have in the countries that they come from. You have to find ways to maximize their spending on the things they don't have in the countries that they come from. That may include having water attractions at sea, because some of them don't know seawater that's calm or that is transparent or translucent, I think is the correct word. And you could look through and see fish. Glass bottom boat rides while you drink rum punch and listen to steel band music was a big thing in Grenada when I was a young lad. And I made money steering the rum runner after school hours, of course, not during school hours. Took people to see the reef, played the guitar and sing Foolishness, steer the boat, make some US dollars. That didn't make its way to the central bank, by the way, or any other bank. It paid for my education. But the point I am making, sir, is that your attractions have to mirror what your guest wants, the guest experience. That's why the Jolly Roger and the Bajan Queen and those boats used to make money. Okay? Sir, I hear you, but don't say the Tourism Product Authority ain't doing nothing because you can't see them walking up and down Accra Beach telling people, come, you know, and drink my rum punch or eat my fish cakes. Sir, tourism in Barbados is not about the Product Authority. It's not about counting heads at the airport. It's about how the visitor experiences Barbados. And that includes traveling on a ZR, which they don't have in the countries they come from. Walking, if that's what they want to do. Sitting down by, you know, the people who sell roti, or cars who sell fish cutters, or wherever it is, okay? Graham tell me motorcycles because he's riding a motorcycle. It's the experience of being in Barbados. And sir, this is where people put on their blinkers and I take mine off. So the streets have to be clean. Bus stops have to be clearly marked. Transportation has to be flowing. And your reception when people come to you and ask for assistance or want to buy your fish cakes or want to buy your whatever it is you're having or your Banks beer, that you are hospitable and that you treat them the same way you treat your locals because they're spending money too. So that's how we begin to enhance and improve our country. But if we take in all we could get to go overseas and enjoy it, or as people say, hoard it under the bed, we dead. We set up a thing in balls and we took it down. Why? We went to, what is the harbor master went to Trinidad. Why? Because they ain't making no more money. You know? That's it. We can't compete with Las Vegas. But we could learn from them. Tourism is my passion. I can't get back there too old. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Hello? 4341790. Good afternoon. Okay, I see waiting 16 minutes, 8 minutes, 7 minutes, so somebody will talk to me eventually. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, brother dear.
How are you, sir?
Not as well as you, but I'm biden.
I too. I too.
I want to ask you a question. Two questions I want to ask you.
Uh-huh.
First one is, I was told, or I was made to understand, that when the Barbados Labour Party met office, they had $2.7 billion in foreign reserve. I don't know if that's true or not. If that is true, how we get so, brother dear?
So we spent more than we were earning. Short answer. Short answer. If you have, sir, if you have $1,500 in the bank, right? And today you spend $500, tomorrow you spend $500, the day after you spend $500, how much money you have in the bank? Not. You put anything back in? That's how we get there.
So who else was looking after, have been looking after Barbados interests? I mean, they just do as they like and nobody saying nothing to me at this point nowhere. To be honest, I really can't understand what's really going on in this country. And then still want them still saying that they want to hold back government out the door to kill me now.
So let me read this to you, right? Uh-huh. Mr. Johnson, good afternoon. I want to announce I totally vote in Democratic Labour Party. Each time I hear politicians from the opposition, I recognize few points that are honest. I'm beginning to think the BLP practice tongue swinging. Their supporters need to practice vote swinging to the DLP. The BLP has consistently practiced leading this country by public relations that does give most. Bajans, a good feel-good mood, I do not appreciate being misled. This DLP always comes in like a mop-up crew and sort the mess left by the BLP. Projects for growth straight, can't figure out what our next piece is, by emergency issues when the DLP is leading. Trust me, sir, on my most generous thoughts, this not occur by chance. I'm saying is, if I vomit under the carpet, I need to distract or obstruct your progress, I can easily ensure you always have to deal with the vomit I left, knowing it is impossible for you to successfully complete your project and effectively hide the stale vomit. It is time the public asks why the DLP always needs to tackle saving the country amid vocal calls for attention to matters neglected by, the person said DLP again, by me, BLP. One reason I vote BLP. Yeah, he says, sorry, matters neglected by the BLP. I am not a fan of PR without substance. Sir, you have people who sit and this is their thought process. You therefore cannot tell that person what you've just said and get them to agree with you because they see it completely different. I sit here, sir, as I said, and I listen to people talk about personalities rather than how you fix an issue. And as long as we focus on personalities and decide whether we want a female leader or a male leader, whether we want a lawyer to lead us or a doctor to lead us or a grassroots man to lead us, we will not fix the problem. Because the problem is not the grassroots man, it's not the female, it's not the lawyer. But I have the same thought, and you have one thought, and the writer has another thought. And we're three different people. We might all need the same thing. We just see it coming from three completely different angles. Brass X, good afternoon. Yep. If we looked at developing the cannabis sector and the many products we would derive from this organically grown product, we would have a sector to exploit, whether it's recreational or byproduct given. But rather we sit on our hands and said it is a gateway drug to harder drugs and the many other reasons not to entertain the many possibilities it has to offer, while alcohol, which is legal, continues to rip through the psyche of our youth. See? And that is another opinion too. Rastax, good afternoon. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
I'm calling because I have to keep making a plug about our transportation system. Yesterday, I had to wait approximately 3 hours, and when I was there, there were actually people who were waiting longer. And to their credit, they actually did announce that, you know, they were having some challenges. But I am just really concerned about us kind of connecting the dots in Barbados when we think about productivity. If you are asking a citizen to get up early to get to work, and that means that they have to get up 4:30 to catch a 5:30 bus because they might not be a 7:30 or 6:30 bus,
mm-hmm.
and then they're getting home at around 8:39. I mean, what time is there for family time? What time there's? I mean, we're not kind of connecting the dots between productivity and mobility and transportation. And not only that, in my observation, I'm in the bus stand waiting, and all these little children running around in between the
rails,
the van stand, and you know, everybody's trying to get a bus, trying to hustle to get a bus. And I'm just concerned that we aren't aware of the delinquency that we're fostering in our young people because we're not showing the due care that we should as adults. And it just makes for a very kind of cold society because it feels as though, you know, we have to accept the squalor. We have to accept the destitution. Everybody is just kind of throwing up their hands.
I am glad you drew the line because it falls in line with what I said earlier and what I think. I don't think we understand, as you said, you call it connecting the dots. I don't think we understand the importance of transportation to the national economy. And I even made mention of the fact that one of the reasons I left Trinidad was because of transportation issues, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it is crucial that we understand it because in various sectors where I've worked, I saw it affecting the tourism industry.
Yes.
Because if you have to close restaurants by 10 o'clock in the night so that people can catch a bus before midnight to get home, then people who come in post 10 o'clock by taxi will not be able to use your restaurant services. So there is, as you said, a connection with everything. And if you have three sets of van stands or bus stands, where if it's pouring rain and you don't get a bus in one stand, you have to walk through water and no lights to get another one or go to another stand, that adds to your frustration. It also allows for more wasted time. If we don't get those things right, we continue to lose, ma'am, and I don't think you are wrong at all in what you've said. The question is, will we understand? Some people will and some people will not. Those who have transportation will worry about the cost of gasoline going up and down, and they will pay no attention to the fact that buses also use diesel, and therefore the price of diesel goes up and down. And then they'll talk about road tax in Trinidad without realizing that the transportation fees go up and down when the gas price in Trinidad goes up and down. Ours is static. So we have to look at our issues, figure out how to massage to fix our end instead of these comparisons that we throw up to avoid dealing with the issue. And I can't say you're wrong. I can't say you're wrong. I have to agree with you.
But I also want to make a bigger point because when bigger companies are looking at bringing, like IBM, all of those are looking at coming to countries, they look at their transport and a network
mm-hmm.
system.
Mm-hmm.
And
communication in general, including telephones and
things. So we have all these high-flying ideas, but we on the ground, we are not kind of get, it just seems that we're not getting it.
Ma'am, I agree with you, you know.
Sadly, I see
exactly what you see. But what continues to befuddle me is what we choose to talk about. We don't choose to talk about that.
Right.
We choose to talk about everything else.
Right.
And we are not going to change it. We're not going to move unless we look at it seriously and address it urgently. For example, since you mentioned in transport, and everybody says we need buses, have we heard from anyone whether we're going to attempt to bring 50 buses per month for a period every 6 months or every 4 months or whatever it is, so that over a period of a year and a half, we have 4 by 50, 200 buses that are not all bought at the same time, that are not all put into service at the same time, that we not all need repairs at the same time for being overworked, so that we don't end up 4 years from now or 3 years from now in the same position we're in today.
Wow.
Have you ever heard anybody talk about that?
No.
And that's my point. This is how you solve a problem. You systematically sit down and look at it and say, look, for the past 20 years, we have ordered 100 buses at a time, and this is what has happened. Should we not change the way we order the buses we order? If we need 200 buses, have we worked out, do we need 25, 40-seater buses that look like the large Toyotas? Do we need 50 minibuses like the ones we use? Do we need 100 transport board buses, but not as big as the transport board buses we have now? So we have a mixed fleet of perhaps the same brand of bus, so we could have, you know, parts brought in from one or two dealers, but we have a different type of bus for a different type of route, for a different type of time of day, so that we run a 40-seater in between our short routes on quick hauls, and we use the long ones for the long routes, and we have an interconnection where, you know, if you change a bus within an hour, you pay one fee of, let's say, $5. That way you don't have to pay $2, $2, $2, $2, and end up paying $12 to get from Warren's to, I know, Spikestown.
Right.
But that, to me, makes sense. And I don't operate buses. I sit down and talk on the radio.
Right. I would love for you all to do a focus, a Sunday brass tacks on this whole transportation issue, because it's just getting worse. And, you know, I'm really concerned about our young people growing up in this, growing up and thinking this is the norm, this is okay, when it really isn't. This is not acceptable. You know, I need to, my child needs to get home at a certain time so they can do their homework, they can feel rested, all of those things.
Mm-hmm. And you can sit and monitor them and check to see
what
they're doing. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
ma'am, I have to tell you, I can't disagree with you. I cannot disagree with you. And when I see the chaos that is on our roads because of the transportation issues that we're not dealing with, when I see overcrowded buses with school children racing one another, when I see transport board buses obviously overloaded with the doors barely closing, trying to get from one place to the other, and people are standing by the side of the road, it is an issue that has to be addressed. Has to. And the pictures of those standing either in the various bus stands hoping for the best does not paint a good picture either. I thank you for your contribution. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello?
I'm listening to you. Go ahead.
Who's speaking?
Ma'am, my name is Dennis Johnson. Can I help you?
Oh, Dennis, I'm so sorry. Yes. my concern, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. And you?
Good. I'm fine, thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a great concern about the violence that these school children are displaying, both in public and in private. Oh, boy. Where do you think it started?
Ma'am, I have no idea. Most likely, most of what we see starts in the home.
Yes. Not only in the home, but they're allowed... what I saw the other evening, I was sitting on my patio, and children were passing. There were two little first form guys, and one was cursing, I called them. And when you talk to them, they're human beings.
Of course.
One little guy didn't even have money to get home, you know. And there he is. He lives in the Ivy. He's in St. George and can't get home. Then a bigger group from another school came. Now, these look like fourth formers. One boy was cursing, cursing. I called him, he came. By the time he got to me, I said, what do you have to say for yourself? And he was so embarrassed, he couldn't face me. And when he left, he looked back, he said, thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that say?
It says that they need care and love.
Exactly.
And they need attention.
Precisely, Mr. Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think one of the solutions would be for parents and teachers to ride on the buses with the children. Not too many. Probably could be arranged with the PTAs. But these children need to know that somebody
cares about them. Yeah. Ma'am, I don't disagree with you, you know. And the other thing is this, the language they use, right? That offends you and offends me.
Right.
Is what they're accustomed hearing and what they talk to each other And to them, it's perfectly normal. I hear people talking to each other, adults sometimes, young people sometimes, and every other word is an expletive, and they don't seem to understand that that's what it is. And while, you know, if somebody called you by one of those names, you would cringe, they seem to take it as, okay, so you call me that, I got a bigger one for you. And they come up with another one. And it's a language.
Yes.
And I always smile. I mean, I remember sitting in a schoolyard and hearing two guys who couldn't be more than about 4 or 5 saying, big man, and I'm looking at a five-year-old and saying, so when you get to 20, what are you going to call yourself if you... And when a parent looks at a one-year-old and say, that's my little man, when he actually becomes a man, what are you going to call him, that boy? It's just the language. And that throws them off as well.
Yes. And very often, that partnership between the school, the parent, and the child.
It is missing.
That tripartite.
It's missing. It's gone. It's gone. It's I don't think mommy's going to take, I don't know how long to rebuild it. It's just not there. They're not there.
But
parents don't trust the teachers. Parents don't trust the teachers. Teachers don't trust the unions. The unions don't trust. Ma'am, we've developed more mistrust of each other than trust in each other. Look at the situation. Look at the situation on the back page of the newspaper, right?
Yes.
You have an altercation on a transport board bus.
What did the driver do? Waited until...
He takes off to get the police and the principal to come to try to restore order. Yes. That's my point. Before, a bus driver would be able to sort it out because the children would respect the driver of their bus.
Exactly.
Today, he has to take the bus to a police station to get the matter resolved. That is the point I'm making. The same thing you did. If I was walking down the road when I was a child, that was a long while ago, making noise, and I passed somebody's house whom I thought knew my mother, I would shut up and tell the person good morning nicely when I pass. And perhaps raise my voice when I'm 2 streets away.
You know, part of the problem...
because I know the person is going to tell my mother. And they didn't have phones.
Right. But you know part of the problem, too? A lot of people are afraid of these children.
Yes, they are.
When they don't recognize that this behavior is a cry for help.
In some cases.
When I hear a boy cursing like a pirate and I call him, by the time he gets to me, he turns in his head, he can't look me
in the eye. He can't look in the eye, yeah.
And he looks back and says, thank you. What is that saying? But parent people would say, man, these children are cursing louder, making shit.
No, or shout at them.
Exactly.
In which case they would shout back. Look, ma'am,
no,
it is the case.
Mr. Johnson, I have never seen that happen. It has always been a cry for help. Children know deep down.
They're
doing wrong.
Something wrong.
If you call them out without embarrassing, but trying to communicate, you will get a positive response. I have never, ever had a negative response.
Ma'am, and I just hope a few more people take comfort and a little support from what you've said and try to start pulling it back, because we all have to start trying to pull it back bit by bit, because whether you have children or you don't, whether I have children or I don't, there is going to be a generation around coming up, and what they do will affect how we live. I would not like to see us get to the stage where we are afraid to go out, to walk to the corner, to get a newspaper, because we're afraid of what somebody younger than us will do to us, because I ain't getting younger, and I don't think anyone is. Every day we live, we get a little older. If I was afraid of my technical operator, producer, because he's younger than me and have a ponytail, and I figure, you know, he come in to do me evil, you know, we get in trouble. Somebody says, yeah, the poor bus driver must have been scared for his life. I am sure. But what I was saying was, once upon a time, you know, the children would be afraid of the bus driver, not the other way around. You would stop the bus and say, look, get off my bus. And they would meekly get off the bus because, you know, he's the driver. Today, they may reach in their backpack and, poor fella, you're right. Yeah. Look, I've been to the United States on one occasion I can recall where a bus driver simply stopped the bus and got off the bus and went and sat down in the bus shelter because there was a big sign saying, do not communicate or touch the bus driver, and somebody touched him on his shoulder. He might park the bus and get off the bus and sit down by the bus shelter. You understand? Just no sweat, no noise, no voices were raised. I don't know if the person was saying something and he didn't hear, and they reached out and tapped him on his shoulder, and my man pulled the bus aside, stop it, and get off the bus. Just saying, right? But that was a long time ago. Brass X, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson. I was listening to you, and you have some very constructive ideas. Mm-hmm. But this is something that grieves my spirit. And if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. It happens to be that some years ago when I was working at the airport, three Canadian businessmen were in this country coming around with business. And it happened to be that their plane was delayed. And they began to speak to us who were there at the time as workers. And one of them in their conversation asked, well, the government of this country will not dig the oil in the country and keep down the place. So at that time, I was a member of the Barbados Labour Party, and I was there, and Tom Adams had the government. And I asked Mr. Ronald Mack. Mr. Ronald Mack told me, we got oil. I asked him if we had oil. He told me, yes, we have oil. And then I saw Tom at one time, he was up there. I told him that this gentleman asked me why the politician would not dig oil. And it happens to be that I asked Mr. Ronald Mack, and Mr. Ronald Mack told me that we have oil. And I asked Mr. Ronald Mack. The next time I saw him, he told me he's going to dig the oil because he spoke with Mr. Mack. And it happens to be that Tom Adams dig the oil. But what got my spirit grieved is I hear that this oil is going to be sold. Well, not assets, it's going to be sold.
Let me straighten that out for you then, okay? The BNTCL, which is the Barbados National Terminal Limited, was going to be sold. The marketing arm of the BNOC, which is the other company that actually does the drilling. So the problem that is not about whether we have oil or don't have oil. It's not about whether the oil is offshore or onshore, whether we're drilling for it. It is the cost of the exploration, the cost of sustaining our oil production, and whether or not, given current world market prices, it is viable so to do. We usually have to employ somebody to do the drilling, or as happened, sell the drilling rights to other people. The BNTCL, which is the National Terminal Limited that is supposedly up for sale, trust me, the reason why it was being sold is the same reason why we're trying to sell the Hilton and other assets, because we need an injection of foreign exchange to support the foreign reserves held by the central bank in order to make our country able to sustain the money we spend on all the things we enjoy. And until we find a way to get large chunks of foreign exchange into the island to prop up the foreign reserves so we could continue to spend the way we like and pay wages and salaries so we could go overseas on vacation and import cars, either new or used, and drive them around so that we don't have to depend on a bus system that ain't working, we can continue to try to sell what is for sale. And people will buy it at whatever they choose to pay for us. Somebody say you can't touch the bus drivers. That don't mean that people mess with them. Some people in jail trying to get out while others trying to get in. Sir, and trust me, those that are getting out, slapping palms with those that are going in and say, I come back soon. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Okay, that person didn't want to talk to me. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Dennis.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm fine. I want to give you a little story.
Uh-huh.
Once upon a time, a lady acquired a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
That was involved in an accident.
Uh-huh.
And she took it to a guy who was supposed to be one of the best body workmen. Did an excellent job on it. Mechanic, repaired the engine, did everything that was necessary, or so he thought. The car looked good, and then it wouldn't start. Filled it up with fuel, started, but had no acceleration. You know what happened? We spent money on all the big parts.
And not the little one.
Got everything fixed. But you forgot to buy, you forgot to check a pin that cost $3 that connected the accelerator cable to the carburetor.
Okay. Uh-huh. And? All right. And the moral of the story is?
Look after the nuts and bolts.
Don't look after the nuts and bolts before you buy the rims and the rims and the repairing job.
Yeah, one of the problems that we have got in Barbados and I think in a lot of our Caribbean economies is that we look after all the fancy sounding economic things, and we don't look after the nuts and bolts of the economy and the society.
So let me ask you this question seriously, huh?
Yeah.
You think with all the brain power we have had and continue to expose that we are creating with all the institutions that we have, we really don't know that transportation is the main vein, artery, heartbeat of how your economy functions? All you need to do, how many minibuses we go on the road? 900? So even if we have 500 minibuses, right? Take 400 of them off the road between 6 o'clock in the morning and midday and tell me what happens in this country.
But then
forget transport board. Get 500 minibuses to stay off the road, any route, between 6 o'clock in the morning and noon and tell me what can happen.
Well, we saw it happen already. But okay. When you talk about the brain power, you see, I'd like to remind you of something that Sir Arthur Lewis once said that, he said that he has seen a lot of people with very good brains who are on the road doing nothing. But he has seen some very average people excelling because of their attitude.
Dude, yeah, makes a lot of sense.
And you see, it is not always your ability is what you do with it. And I find that we spend a lot of time as you said, talking about things that make no difference to how we survive. We play all sorts of little games.
Mm-hmm.
And basically we allow things to go down the drain because we refuse to deal with basic things. And I think that that's one of the major problems that we have, that there are too many basic things that we're ignoring. And there are too many people who are not doing the things that they're supposed to do. And so ends my sermon for the day.
And I thank you, sir, for it, because it's a good way, I think, to pull the curtain down on this, the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Look, I thoroughly enjoyed today's edition. I want to thank you for making it an enjoyable one. On behalf of Graham Vaughan, a technical operator, producer, those who sent messages via WhatsApp. They've been very encouraging today, actually. I got very few licks there today. Called somebody just now brother when they were actually female. So my sister says, apology accepted, after all, you're male. As a circumstance of birth. If you look, there's a picture, one of the few pictures of me on the web somewhere that says, you know, you're... Your male is by your gender, you know. You're a gentleman by choice. And that's what I try to be, by choice. Have a good afternoon to all of you. On behalf of the all-male team, by choice, of Graham Vaughan and yours truly. Be good.